Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. President Donald Trump barreled through warnings of a damaging trade war with China Thursday, vowing an additional $100 billion in tit-for-tat tariffs on Beijing, having already asked for $50 billion worth of Chinese goods to be punitively taxed. Trump responded to Beijing's countermeasures by doubling down.
For many years, no president wanted to go against China economically, and we're going to do it.
Trump said he was still open to talks, but only if they were aimed at achieving free, fair, and reciprocal trade. China on Thursday formally launched a World Trade Organization challenge against Trump's first round of proposed tariffs. Beijing has also unveiled plans for painful import duties targeting politically sensitive U.S. exports, including soybeans, aircraft, and automobiles. And even as President Trump mulls a U.S. pullout from Syria, insisting the Islamic State group is almost completely defeated, the extremist group is showing signs of a revival. Despite being kicked out of the main towns they once occupied near the Iraqi border, the militants have regrouped elsewhere and revised their tactics, recently mounting a brazen attack on a border city in eastern Syria and expanding their footprint inside the Syrian capital itself. President Donald Trump has said that he wants to send between two to 4,000 National Guard members to the U.S.-Mexico border. Speaking on Air Force One Thursday, he gave his first estimate on the guard levels. And when asked about the cost, he said the administration is looking at that. Trump says he plans to keep the guard members there until a large portion of his wall is built. This is VOA. The daughter of a former Russian spy poisoned by a nerve agent said Thursday in her first public comment that she's recovering, even as the international furor over the attack intensifies, with Russia claiming intelligence services of other countries are probably behind it. Britain's UN ambassador, Karen Pierce, shot back that Russia has come up with 24 theories on who bears responsibility for the poisoning of an ex-spy and his daughter in England, but the UK is only one, and it's likely Russia. U.S. Ambassador on the Economic Social Council of the UN, Kelly Curry, during a Security Council meeting on the situation.
Either Russia deliberately used this military-grade weapon or failed to declare and secure its stocks of this nerve agent.
The British government says it relied on a combination of scientific analysis and other intelligence to conclude that the nerve agent came from Russia. A giant fissure kilometers long is slicing through the road and surrounding countryside in Kenya's Rift Valley, a reminder that the region sits on some of the most unstable ground on the continent. Nathan Frandino reports.
Geologists say the gash indicates the unstable Rift Valley may be shifting and that the fissure could spread further with more heavy rains expected over the next 2 months. Some also say the underlying fault line could split Africa in two over the next tens of millions of years. And geologist David Odede says locals need to know about what lies beneath.
Now, people cannot know that there's a fault because when it is filled, it just looks like a normal ground. You can actually just do your infrastructure thinking that it's a very normal ground. But the fact is that they are buried faults that people are not able to see most of the time.
Faults that experts will be watching in the years and decades to come.
Former First Lady Michelle Obama addressed a forum in Boston Thursday devoting empowering women to become leaders in their fields. With the current divide in U.S. politics, she talked about how so many have asked her to run for president.
I think people should be less disheartened by the fact that me and Oprah don't want to run, and more disheartened by the fact that Hillary Clinton, probably the most qualified person to ever seek the office of presidency, of the presidency, lost.
Organizers say they invited Obama because she's a passionate and tireless champion of women, families, and young people. This year's conference is being held at Boston's Seaport World Trade Center with the theme, Disrupt the Ordinary. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There was a post-election mayhem yesterday in Sierra Leone's capital and other parts of the country.
Now that the retired brigadier has been sworn in, this is the litmus test for him to take leadership. We have seen pictures on the social media and reports coming from Kenema district. It's not good for this country at all.
Abdoulaye Birite is the spokesman for former Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma and also head of media campaign for the former ruling APC party. The party of new President Julius Maada Bio urges time for governance and nation building, and a former hostage returns to Somalia to help train that country's coast guard.
Every day when sunshine, we wake up, we are afraid. But one thing I was thinking, I thought, if I get a chance to be released and go back to the civilized society, I will try my level best to do something against this human trade.
Saraf Surasena was once captured by pirates off the coast of Somalia. Students at America's premier black university this week occupied the institution's administration building. And Niger develops a successful plan to save that country's giraffe population. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The spokesman for the now ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, says election politicking is over and now is the time for governing and nation building. Lahai Lawrence Lima, National Publicity Secretary of the SLPP, has also called on the Sierra Leone National Police to continue to demonstrate professionalism, being mindful that they are a state institution mandated to protect all Sierra Leoneans. The warning followed a mayhem yesterday in the capital, Freetown, and in other parts of the country between SLPP and APC supporters. SLPP spokesman Lima blames APC supporters for disrupting celebrations marking the inauguration of President Julius Maada Bio.
The APC supporters are actually behind the violence in the sense that President Bio has his brother who contested as a member of parliament in the constituency where the APC office is located. And so today you have a good number of SLPP supporters who converge at that premises celebrating around Brookfield Sykes Street area where they intended to converge at the National Stadium. And so pockets of APC supporters were not happy about the celebration of members of the Sierra Leone People's Party, and so they decided to perpetrate violence on them. And largely from the report I gathered, that much of these things were happening in the presence of some police personnel. Either they were afraid of acting, but they did not act, and these people were disturbing the celebration of the members of the Sierra Leone People's Party.
So you are saying it was not the SLPP supporters who were in the marketplace destroying market stalls?
Even before the announcement of the results by the National Electoral Commission, a good number of supporters of the then ruling party, which is now the opposition party, were dissatisfied as a result of the results that were coming in. So even before the announcement, they were on the rampage destroying properties at Abacha Street and the marketplace. Today, again, I learned the same mayhem continued. But what I want to emphasize is the point that supporters of the Sierra Leone People's Party are people who ordinarily will enjoy affairs, but will not take upon any opportunity to engage in any act of violence.
Lahai, when I spoke to the APC spokesperson, he indicated or he implied that the APC was planning a challenge to the election of Julius Maada Bio. The president, Julius Maada Bio, had something to say to the APC supporters.
Well, either they are putting up a brave fight, but I would always say to the APC that they have lost and they must accept the fact that they have lost honorably. It was a fierce fight, but at the end of the day, the SLPP has emerged. And he was also able to thank President Nkrumah for guiding the transition process, which he described as a very peaceful transition. We were also expecting yesterday the presidential contender of the APC, Dr. Samora Kamara, who contended with Brigadier Bio, to have actually congratulated President Bio. But President Bio didn't receive any congratulatory message from the APC presidential candidate.
I was in Liberia during that country's presidential runoff election. It was bitterly contested, but the outgoing vice president, Joseph Boakai, did come on when the results were announced to give a conciliatory speech congratulating George Weah. You are saying that Mr. Samora Camara has not done similar thing.
And from what we gathered when the swearing ceremony was going on, I learned that Mr. Samora Camara was on the national broadcaster and also telling Sierra Leoneans that he is going to court because he is not satisfied with the outcome of a very credible, transparent, free, fair elections that have been conducted by the National Electoral Commission, and which even local and international stakeholders have certified that the process was free and fair.
Baha, it's so nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, sir.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the now ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. The spokesman for now former Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma has expressed disappointment that the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, could not control its supporters in the euphoric celebration of their party's victory. SLPP candidate retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio was sworn in Wednesday night after winning the country's runoff election. Abdoulaye Berete, who is also head of media campaign for the now former ruling APC party, says now is the time for retired Brigadier Mada Bio to live out the true meaning of his commitment to be the president for all Sierra Leoneans. Berete says it is unimaginable that a reasonable APC supporter will go into SLPP's stronghold like Kenema to disturb the SLPP's victory celebration. Instead, Berete accused SLPP supporters of retributive violence.
I think now that the retired brigadier has been sworn in, this is the litmus test for him to take leadership, because at the end of the day, we have seen pictures on the social media and reports coming from Kenema District, which happens to be one of the strongholds for the Sierra Leone People's Party, is not good for this country at all. We have seen situations whereby police officers have been chased. In fact, there are strong reports that one of the OSD personnel has died of his wounds, and also the AIG in the Eastern Region, Caro Camara, has been whisked away because his life is under threat. They wanted to kill him. And also, the youth leader for the All People's Congress Party, who resides at a place called Boma, his house has also been razed to the ground through arson. So with all of these events that are happening, with shops being vandalized, and people are now in perpetual fear, not only in Kenema, but also reports in Bo and other parts of the country. And this is where we are calling on the Sierra Leone police, particularly the new government. We know they are very needy, but at the same time, all this of violence will not answer to the clarion call for us to have a smooth transition to consolidate our democracy.
Mr. Berete, let me say that I did speak with the publicity secretary of the SLPP. They blame supporters of the APC. They are saying that the celebration was disrupted by the APC, including some APC supporters wearing SLPP colors and disrupting the celebration.
I think that is very unfortunate to come from a government that has just assumed the mantle of leadership in this country. How can APC supporters infiltrate the crowd when they know very well that these are in the majority and this is a stronghold? And besides, look at the pictures. So they want to say it is APC supporters that went to lynch that police officer who is reportedly died of his wounds. They want to say it is APC supporters that went to bomb the house of the APC youth leader at a place called Bomber. Is it an APC people that will go to commit vandalized shops along the road? In the politics of honesty, I think this is the time whereby the commitment made by the brigadier himself, who has assumed the leadership of this country, that he is going to be a president for everybody in this country, this is the test, because people cannot be seen to be in perpetual fear.
Mr. Berete, I'm sure you would agree that this is the time for leadership. As far as I know, the candidate, Mr. Samura Kamara, has not come out to congratulate President Madabio. And people say the holdout may be responsible for some of the major disagreement between the two parties and their supporters.
I don't see the relationship between a constitutional provision that says if somebody, after the announcement of the result, if he thinks there are some irregularities that he's so passionate about, he can go to court within 7 days to file a petition and a spiral of violence across the country. I don't see the relationship at all.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for former Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma and also head of media campaign for the former ruling All People's Congress Party. You are speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington today. It's Friday, April 6th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 and a half minutes past the hour. In 2010, pirates captured Sri Lankan nautical engineer Saraf Surasena off the coast of Somalia and held him hostage for over 2 years. But after his release, Surasena returned to war-torn Somalia to help train the country's nascent coast guard to protect their shores from high seas banditry. Jason Pantinke has the story from the Somali port city of Bososa.
It was meant to be a routine voyage. In December 2010, Sri Lankan sailor Saraf Surasena was the engineer in a 19-man crew aboard the Panamanian-flagged MV Orna. They were sailing from South Africa to India with a load of coal. But northeast of the Seychelles Islands in the Indian Ocean, Somali pirates attacked. They fired rocket-propelled grenades at the Orna and boarded the vessel. Suddenly, Surasena and his fellow crew members were prisoners on their own ship.
And even we are going to the toilet, somebody comes behind us with a machine gun.
The hijacking of the Orna occurred at the height of the Somali pirate menace, which paralyzed Indian Ocean shipping lanes a decade ago. For the crew, it was a terrifying ordeal lasting 2 years. Surasena and the others endured hunger and beatings. One crew member was shot, though he survived.
Every day when sunshine, we wake up, we're afraid. We don't know at next time who's going to be killed, who's going to be hurt. But one thing I was thinking, I thought, anyway, whenever if I get a chance to be released and go back to the civilized society, I will try my level best to do something against this human trade. This is a human trade, nothing else. They hold the human and they demand money.
Eventually, Surasena's family managed to raise $10,000 to pay off the pirates. He was handed over to Somalia's government in Mogadishu on New Year's Eve 2012. 2 weeks later, he was home in Sri Lanka. Soon after, the other crew members remaining in captivity were released as well. But Surasena longed to go back to Somalia. At the time, the UN Office of Drugs and Crime was running a program to train Somali coast guards. They needed an engineer to teach boat mechanics and maintenance. Surasena got the job. Today, he lives in the port city Bososo, staying in a fortified UN compound due to the war-torn nation's persistent insecurity. So far, he's trained two Coast Guard units in different parts of Somalia that have deployed on the high seas.
One type we call two-stroke engines.
His latest group of trainees are from Galmudug, the same place where he was once held under the guard of a 9-year-old armed with an AK-47. A boy he would befriend during his captivity.
I'm happy over here. My part is to enhance the capability, I mean to say, about engineering. I'm an engineer. And I have a good team in Bososo, so they are good mechanics now. In direct, I'm participating against this piracy.
Since its heyday a decade ago, piracy has dropped dramatically in the Indian Ocean, thanks in part to local coast guards and deployments of international navies in Somali waters. But Surasena says it will take more than force to stamp it out forever.
These people are not well looked after. They suffer. In the same time, there are some other people in the same society living luxury life, right? So these people wanted to make money, either in good way or bad way. Whatever we do against the piracy, we cannot totally stop unless we develop the country.
Until then, Surasena says he'll continue to do his small part in the fight against piracy. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Bososo, Somalia.
50 years after sit-ins at Howard University in Washington, D.C., forced the school to develop a more robust African-American studies program, students this week took over a campus administration building, demanding a stronger voice in the school's decision-making, better housing, and financial resources. Aisha Sarayal reports.
In the days after a scandal over alleged corruption in the school's administration was revealed, Howard University students have staged the longest sit-in in the school's history with a list of 9 demands for the university.
All of the demands that we have were based off of a survey, a student survey that we did almost like a month or so ago that we did. So all these demands are things that students have wanted, but I guess our priority is to have student power, which is also our last demand, democratizing the university so students are able to have a voice and opinion on the decisions that are happening on this campus.
I have been staying here at night. First night, it was kind of, I don't know, I want to say like uncomfortable, you know, because I'm not usually used to staying inside of the administration building, but everybody has made it feel like a home setting. We have a lot of activities and stuff like games. We had open mic night.
Their sit-in at this historically black university falls on the 50-year anniversary of another student sit-in on campus.
50 years ago, that building right there.
In 1968, there were a lot of students who were displeased with the university, how it was being run, and we wanted more emphasis on black studies. I think it's come a long way as far as black studies goes. I know they have a whole curriculum on black studies. So I think our generation, our protest was successful in that way. But as far as the treatment of the students, I don't think they're being respected.
Apathy is no longer an issue. These students are very active and I support them.
Alumni, people who've been a part of the protests in 68 and 89 coming out and showing their support has been really inspirational.
Just stay with it. Stick with it. You're going to be successful. You're going to be proud of yourself. You're going to look back like I'm looking back and you're going to say, I was there.
Negotiations between the students and administration have resulted in a few compromises. But the protesters say they will not stop their sit-in until all 9 demands are met. Howard University did not respond to VOA's request for comment. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
This year, Niger will expand upon its successful plans to save giraffes in the country by setting up the first ever satellite population east of the capital, Niamey. While the giraffe in Africa remains on the endangered list, Niger is regarded as a success story after increasing its population from only 49 in the mid-1990s to 600 presently. Julian Fennessy, director of the Giraffe Conservation Foundation, spoke to Ricky Stryak about how Niger's success story is a helpful tale.
Now what we need to do is, in the areas that giraffes are dire, we need to work closely with partners to now do something about it and get the support to do something, especially in countries around Eastern Africa, Central and Western Africa.
Have numbers gone down all over the continent, or are they slowly going up since the giraffes slipped onto the endangered list?
What's happening across the continent varies. There's no one problem is the same, you know, across. In Southern Africa, the numbers have actually gone up in the last 30 years. You know, in Namibia, it's gone up by 160% alone in the last 30 years. South Africa also gone up by a couple of 100%. But in countries like Kenya, we are seeing that there's potentially a decline is continuing in some areas. But we're also seeing that governments are doing really good efforts now. We're working closely to develop national strategies. So there is success stories, there's no doubt about that. For example, let me say in Niger, in West Africa, the population in the mid-1990s was 49 individuals. Today, with great government, NGO, local and international support, we're looking at the population over 600. And I mean, that is really a true success story. It's still a small number, but let's be honest, hopefully we can continue that growth and hopefully help giraffe before it's too late.
And everyone talks about Niger, and you mentioned it, as the success story for saving the giraffes in the country. What did they do that can possibly be replicated in other areas?
So Niger's success story is truly remarkable for one of the poorest countries in the world. What basically they did is, first they realized that there was a problem. Then what they did is developed legislation to say, if you kill a giraffe anymore, you will be locked up, you will be prosecuted. And they actually implemented it. Most interesting, what we're planning at the end of this year is actually setting up the first ever satellite population. So we're taking staff away from now. They only live in communal areas, which is amazing. You see them on the main road, just walking along the side of the road. But what we're going to do is set up a new population with the government support in a place called Gadabaji, which is a little sort of east of the capital further. You know, we're going to translocate some giraffe there and set up population that used to historically be there and now reintroducing it. And that's the way of the future.
You know, the communities that live in this area, what kind of hurdles do you guys anticipate?
You know, obviously it's a big tale in the sense that people are relatively poor, they're subsistence farmers, and giraffe in their current area sometimes go in at night and steal their peas and their mangoes and things like that. So moving giraffe to a new area, it's really important to do community engagement, discussing, providing opportunities for other development. And it's not just the giraffe, but they're the backbone of helping the communities get future benefits, whether it's water, whether it's education. So linking all these things together is really key.
Julian Finessi is the director of the Giraffe Conservation Foundation. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Windhoek, Namibia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Confederations Cup as five former African champions are among 32 clubs involved in CAF Confederations Cup playoffs first leg this weekend as they chase group places. Raja Casablanca of Morocco, Enyimba of Nigeria, V Club of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kara of Congo Brazzaville and ASEC Musa of the Ivory Coast are all in the race. V Club and ASEC have home advantage. The other three one-time title holders play away first as Confederations Cup last 32 winners face CAF Champions League last 32 losers. Kenyan champions Gomahia will be without Ugandan left-back Geoffrey Walushimbi when they take on South Africa SuperSport United in the first leg of their CAF Confederations Club playoffs in Machakos on Sunday. Dylan Kerr, head coach of Gomahia, believes they are in the competition to win it.
We've got a massive task ahead of us because even though SuperSport are doing indifferently in the league this year to where they usually are, and they've got rid of their manager just recently, they've got something to prove.
Staying with football news, a Zambian national team coach, Wetsin Nyerinda, has told the Football Association of Zambia that they can fire him if they want to. The coach has challenged his employers to take a bold step and fire him, saying he will not appear before the technical committee, which was called to review his performance. According to the Times of Zambia, Nyerinda has asked the Football Association of Zambia to do as they wished and that the technical committee meeting scheduled for this week was unnecessary. And now to athletics. The 21st edition of the Commonwealth Games got underway in Australia on Wednesday, but not without some hitches. Gold Coast organizers apologized on Thursday after the public transport network failed its first major test of the Commonwealth Games, causing long delays for ticket holders traveling to and from the opening ceremony. In the meantime, Henry Shoman has won the men's triathlon to hand Team South Africa their first gold medal at the Commonwealth Games in Australia. Shoman won his event in a time of 52 minutes, 31 seconds.
I've had a fantastic start to the year. And, you know, last year post-Olympics, I had a bit of a down to come here and win Commonwealth Games. I'm just so truly happy with my performance. I'm happy for my family. I race for my country. And I'm just so happy with that.
And for Team Kenya head coach Jafet Kemi, he has tipped 3,000 meter steeplechase defending champion Purity Cheruiyotich to successfully defend her title in this year's Commonwealth Games in Australia. Cheruiyotich won the 2014 title in Glasgow, Scotland, after beating her compatriot and reigning world champion Milka Chinyewa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, April 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday for more features on African news here on Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the life and legacy of Winnie Madikizela Mandela, the giant of the anti-apartheid movement who died last Monday. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.